DJ, bring that back.
When I move to the moon.
Just like that.
When I move to the moon.
Just like that.
When I move to the moon.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, DJ, bring that back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box, and I'm very glad, Molly, that no matter how terrible my teams are going to go this year, no matter how many points I'm going to drop, how many digits there are in my ranking, 5, 6, I don't really care, at least I didn't do what Dr. Dream Team did this week, Molly.
You think we threw him off by having him on last week? He's just, was off his game a little bit.
Yeah, so I did predict the week before he came on that he would have to start tanking. Well, how right I was. He actually, after coming on last week, he surreptitiously or inadvertently, I'm not quite sure how meant it was, but he left his two North Melbourne players in his side and copped a donut. He intentionally or not ate a donut. I've never seen it before from a supposed expert. I'll just gloss over the fact that even if he had actually played someone in that even with his donut, he still beat me by a fair bit. But we'll get onto that, Molly, because I know you've got a bone to pick with me of possibly not equal, but I don't know. Perhaps you're as angry at me about what I've done this week as what Dr. Dream Team would be with himself. What is it you're angry at me about?
Well, we're going into our sixth year of the Coach's Box, and everyone who has listened for any part of those 6 years would be well aware of the Monty curse. The Monty curse of players who you come in, bring into your side, have a better than average chance of having something terrible happen to them. So for that reason, we brought in the Coach's Box Hawk Talk rule where you do not trade in Hawk players. And who did you trade in this week?
Sam Mitchell. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I just like him so much. And I thought because I said, you know, he was not going to get tagged. It was going to be Hodge and Burgoyne and Cyril that was going to get the tags. And he's going to be sitting around, cheating around halfback, getting cheap kicks. And what does he do? I think there must be a new rule, apart from the Hawk Talk rule, Molly. Perhaps I call it the Kane Corns rule, or is it the reverse Kane Corns rule? Because of course, you remember a year or two ago, Kane Corns had the birth of a kid just before a game he played in Darwin, I believe, and scored 140 that night after his kid had been born. I don't know what the problem was with Sam Mitchell. Why couldn't he have done a Kane Corns and scored 140 against the Tigers, of all people? He could have chopped in the rain. He could have broken through the Dream Team barrier. He could have scored 200 that night. And what's he do? He's got his family issues. It's now resolved into a hamstring issue. Obviously, his wife, in delivering those babies, was holding onto his legs so hard, he's just twanged his hamstring. What's going on there, Molly?
It's one thing to be carrying around two little babies, even if you have two of them at once, but to be carrying around you as well, mate, it was just too much for him.
So you're saying it would have been balanced if he'd been carrying a baby in each arm, but with me on the back, it was just too much.
That's it. It was just too much. Or maybe it was the disgust of being picked up by someone with that sort of moustache, mate. Maybe that was it. Maybe you shave it off tomorrow. World will balance up.
That joke's only meaningful to those people who are watching live with the video. I've decided to turn on the video tonight because I am growing a moustache, which has turned out well. I tried to be like Brad Pitt in Inglourious Basterds, but it's looking more like Captain Darling from Blackadder. So yes, it will come off tomorrow, but just for this evening, everyone's going to see it, and it'll be. If you do go to the Ustream page for Fan Footy, then you'll be able to see it in all its glory or ingloriousness. Anyway, we'll move on. We've already started off with Hawk Talk, Molly, and people have bagged us already. So we're going to keep that for the rest of the round review, but we probably should get on to the round review. Now, one of the things that happened, obviously, in the Collingwood-Carlton game on Friday night was I got to debut the pumpkin icon, and I put it on to Chris Dawes because he had a terrible first half. He was on Jamison, I believe, and this was his first week of the season where he actually had a decent opponent, and he I think he was about mid-20s, I think, by half-time, and the pumpkin was well-deserved. And then, of course, I had to quickly switch in the third quarter from the pumpkin to the garbage can. Now, do I actually owe Chris Dawes an apology, Molly? Is the fact that he eventually ended up with a just on 100, does that justify the people who brought him in, or is that a case of, as I think Tarquin might have been talking about on the Big Footy boards this week, a bad process but a good result?
Well, I mean, I think at the moment you have to say no. It was perhaps the good process in this case is not listening to all us so-called experts with our fangled rules about mid-prices who aren't going to be able to maintain it, and instead going with your gut and saying, look, this guy's done the job. He's playing for a good side. He's playing well up forward, getting the ball. He's another thing about it with the sub rule, as the old saying goes, you know, everyone might get tired, but he's still going to be, you know, as big as he is. So, he did it late in the game. So, you know, they've got another easy game this week. In fact, they've got Richmond with no defenders. There's every possible chance he could rack out another 100 and be that mid-pricer that we're all talking about that can break the dominance of the guns and rookie strategy.
Yeah, Docker 76 brings up the point I was about to make on the chat. He brings up the name of Michael Hurley, who I bagged out last week for being a nuffy pick, I think was the quote, Molly. Now, I have a theory about players like Dawes, and we'll probably throw Cloak in there from Collingwood as well, and players like Hurley. These are big, hulking, bullocking key position players who traditionally have been very poor for Dream Team and sometimes for Supercoach. Some of them, you know, obviously Jonathan Brown is a case in point for both competitions, but generally speaking, those big lummoxes down in the forward line don't generally rack up enough cheap stats for Dream Team. Now, I've been listening to all of the panel shows over the course of the weekend, and there does seem to be a bit of a shift in thinking that we've seen the 2011 brand of AFL football, and it is the forward press. This is the new buzzword, and the part of the one aspect of the forward press is that once these small forwards do turn, you know, cause turnovers in midfield, they do tend to bomb it long to the square. There's a lot more long kicks to contested, leading to contested marks and possessions to these big blokes, because they're actually, they're not spotting up the, you know, they're Collingwood six-footer type half-forward flanks anymore, because it's the half-forward flanks are actually getting the ball, and then they're pumping it in it long for the big blokes. So it's players like Dawes. There's a lot of marks, I don't know, I haven't seen the stats on this, obviously, but there seems to me to be a lot more marks 10 to 15 metres from goal taken by these big blokes this year. Just anecdotally, I haven't got all the champion stats in front of me, but just from watching all the games, it seems to be a lot more goals from that this year, and it's players like Dawes and Hurley, and you probably throw a number of other players in there, who are benefiting from that, Molly.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think a lot of that as well, where when the turnover happens around the half-back line, then these guys aren't on their opponent. They're in that short zone around that first kick, especially if it's like a kick out, and they're free and they're away from their opponent. Their opponents are scrambling to get back on them. So I think that's definitely a point about it. So between that and the fact that these guys aren't getting any smaller, their opponents are getting tighter, because normally they're the ones who have to do that extra running to help out their teammates and the like. So definitely Dawes, I mean, and even Cloak, I mean, I haven't looked at his stats, but I think he did pick up in the second half as well from memory from that game. So, you know, both these guys are gonna benefit from that.
Yep, well, I think we have to acknowledge that the game is changing, and it's changing before our eyes, and players like Dawes and Hurley, you have to reassess them. And
So now the chat and Twitter asks during the week, are you going to apologise?
To Dawes, no, because his first half was putrid, and he fully deserved the pumpkin, and his garbage can was also deserved.
And Hurley for calling him a nuffy pick.
I think the jury is still out on him. I mean, I'd like to see him score that well when Essendon are losing, and they will lose significantly this season. So, yeah, they're up now, but Essendon are a streaky side for mine, and I don't buy into the Essendon hype, but I'm sure you don't either as a fellow Hawthorn supporter. But I don't think they're going to be top four. They'll be top eight, but I don't think they're going to go as well for the rest of the season. They're up at the start, and they will fall away, especially towards the second half of the season. So I don't think he's a keeper. But yes, it's very good if you've got him at the start and you're riding the roller coaster. But just be aware that there will be a drop in the second half of the season.
Yep.
Right, Neil, just
before
to finish
you go
off
on too, do you want to just explain the theory behind the pumpkin?
Right, see, it's the pumpkin. Okay. The pumpkin is the icon that I put on players who in previous weeks have turned into wonderful, pretty princesses and dazzled us all with their beauty and wit and dream team and super coach scoring, and all of a sudden the clock has turned midnight and they've turned back into a pumpkin.
So you could go from a princess into a pumpkin into a spud.
Yes, although actually it wasn't a princess that went into a pumpkin, was it? I think it was a doorman or something.
A carriage.
Was it a carriage? Was it? Yes.
Yes.
Oh, so yes, we're talking about a dream team conveyance then. Yes. My metaphors
okay.
are a bit... yes, anyway. But that was the idea, anyway. But and also, it just
I
looks,
like it.
It looks nice. Anyway, yes, now to finish off on the Collingwood side, Molly, from that Friday night, Andrew Cracker, is he startable? Given the fact that he's getting half games and he's being played in the forward line so much, and he's a prime candidate, especially early in the season, for that sub-vest.
Right, that's a good question. I mean, I think the next 3 weeks, or at least this week and week five, my guess is to say that we're not going to have a lot of choice. It's going to be a slim pickings on who we're going to look to play. I think he is startable because of his potential, his ceiling, and his floor. I mean, even the games where he's played half games, he's still nearly scored 50. And we know if he does get a full game, which could be around the corner, he's absolute potential to rack off 100. So I think he's absolutely startable. I mean, I've in my lineup, I've started him every week. I wish I had have had Prestia in instead of him last week, but that's a different story. But yeah, I think he's absolutely startable. I mean, you'd probably prefer not to, but with the buys and his multi-positionalness, probably looking at starting him this week.
But speaking about players, I mean, in this game, a lot of people would have picked up Ed Kuno or Liberatore. Would you still be starting him over those two?
No, I probably wouldn't be starting him over those two now. I'd have either of those in, depending on which week. Of course, this week upcoming, the Bulldogs are one of the teams with the byes. So,
and would you be starting him over a Swallow or a Harris?
No, not over either of those two either.
See, this is a dilemma, is because people would probably have three of those guys, and so he starts to go down the pecking order. So he might be startable, but he might not actually start because he's your eighth or ninth midfielder rather than what you expected might be your fifth or sixth to start off with.
Yeah, no, I think we had hopes that he could be that 80 to 90 rounder, and with the early season distrust about his fitness, that's really, really affected it. So,
and of course, the chat is mentioning, of course, he is a forward. So what about him versus Darling and Richardson, and the other one would be down there, Almatera and Dixon, and even Petrie you'd probably throw in there.
Yeah, everyone but Petrie, it would be a bit of a toss-up and maybe look at their opponents, because that's the other factor about it is, you know, there's not a lot of opponents that you're looking at and saying, they're playing this team. Whereas there will be teams that will come up that you'll think that they're going to struggle. The team that the rookie is playing for is coming up against a team that they might struggle against. So in that case, you know, you might be not playing them. Like, for instance, I'm just trying to find one. So, you know, Geelong in Sydney this week, or Richmond. So you probably wouldn't be looking to start Conker, even if he was playing better than what he is.
Mm. Yep, and the chat also want us to talk about Cracker versus Tapscott. I think Tapscott wins there. Prestia?
Yep.
We'll talk about Gold Coast in a minute. I'm not sure about Prestia versus Cracker. I think Cracker's a better bet, but... Yeah, certainly Tapscott looms as a safer bet than Cracker. But anyway, we'll get on to the Kurno himself, Molly, getting on to the Carlton side. Now, even though he's gained 77,000 in Dream Team and 99,000 in Supercoach, is it still not too late to get on board? Because he's delivered, 300 scores. He's scoring like he is the next Michael Barlow. Do you have to get on board even if you haven't got him?
You'd have to seriously think about it, absolutely. You're going to feel a bit silly for missing out on that 70K, nearly 80K price rise. But last year, I forget who the famous DTF from the famous DTF thread was, but he didn't pick up Podsy Adley the first week, but saw of his price rising and saw that he still had a lot of price rises in him and he was going to play. So, there was some value in him. Now, Kurno might be a little bit different in that, his job security is under question and his potential for being a sub is under question. But I think he's got enough, coins in the bank to say that he's worth an option, I think.
It's going to be interesting this week down at Carlton because I was reading the In the Mix article on AFL, which they have every week at about this time of the week. Molly, I'm sure you would have seen it, and
yes,
a lot of our listeners would have. About did they have it last year? I'm not sure they actually.
They did.
I think they started it last year. That's right. So this is where they preview the selection for the upcoming week. Now, it is fairly up and down that article because, of course, it is collated from a bunch of different writers, and some of them have better ideas than others, but. I did notice this week that they said that not only with, obviously, the issue with Dygan and Laidler with Bauer and Lucas and... there was another one. I'll have to bring it up now. There was another tall defender who was looking for selection. But also in the sort of midfield, you were looking at players like Armfield and Joseph, who were... also fighting for selection. So even though, from a fantasy perspective, you think that if a guy's averaging 100 in Dream Team, that must mean he's getting a lot of the ball and surely his job security is pretty good. But from a role point of view, a player like Armfield might actually have more arrows in his quiver. He might have more strings in his bow, is what I was trying to think of, the analogy. But... with all those players supposedly, if you believe this AFL report, challenging from the VFL, then it still does call into question Kurno's job security. So there's still a question mark over him. So it is a valid choice, although it's a pretty big risk. If you are in a position where you can get Kurno this week, and you are taking a big chance by not getting him. Hoping that he's going to get dropped and everyone who's got him is going to suddenly have to, reassess. So, I don't know whether that's a bit too big a risk or not. Whether to go with the herd or whether to hope that something terrible happens to Kurno and his job security.
I think part of the decision will be who you're looking to trade out for him. I took a big risk trading out Code for Suckling this week, but...
Mm. Molly.
Probably talk about that in a minute. But
yes. Now, what was that rule you were telling me about just here before? What was that Hawk Talk rule you were telling me about? No Hawthorn players?
No, just for you, just for the Monty curse. No Molly curse. The Molly curse is that they star.
You reckon?
I remember, with Peterson and the likes. Anyway,
what's good for the goose is good for the gander, Molly.
Well, see, even heavy saying the Monty curse. It's well documented.
Yes.
But but back to what I was saying, like if it was for, let's say, a Conker who might lose his spot this week, then it might be worth doing. But if it's for someone who's still going up, like I see Docker 76, say, Buick, he's going to have the bye this week, but his job security looks a lot better. I wouldn't be doing that sort of trade. But if it was for maybe a Hibbard or something like that, then maybe you do it, or maybe an underperforming mid-pricer or the likes, then you might look to do that. But I wouldn't do it for one of the, the middle-of-the-road rookies like Buick or the likes.
What, so there's one name mentioned there, Jared Irons from Port. So I suppose those two would be the main candidates from my perspective. It would be Conker or irons. So not because of job security reasons, but because of scoring potential reasons.
Yeah. I'm just checking out irons. Conqueror, I would seriously think of doing. And irons, yeah. So, you know, he had a little bit of a price rise, but hasn't really been scoring after round one. So definitely there. Foley, I'd do in a second, one of the people in the chat has said. So.
Well, we'll talk about Foley in a minute, actually. But yes, okay. Now, just to finish on Carlton, the Dygan and Laidler situation. So we've had the first week this week where you've had Watson, Dygan, Laidler, and Jamieson all on the same side, and surely you can't fit all four of those, plus Bauer, and I've just got to look up who that other one is. I'm forgetting who it was. Lockie Henderson, although I suppose he'd be coming up forward, wouldn't he? So I suppose Lucas, is Lucas I think it's another tall defender down there. I'm trying to think of, but anyway, so look, they can't fit five. Well, there's White, obviously. Is he still on the side, White? I don't think he is.
No,
they've got Watson in there at the moment. Yeah, so White was the other one I was thinking of. So White wasn't mentioned in that AFL article, but Bauer was, and he apparently is knocking on the door. So which of those goes out? Given that Laidler seems to be the most. I mean, if you're looking for the various strengths from the exposed form we've seen of them, Laidler seems to me to be the most defensive of them. Dygan seems to be the one they use as a loose man, so his positioning seems to be the thing that they value him for. And with Watson, it seems to be the kicking that they're all raving about. So which of the... I mean, assuming that they have Bauer and Jamieson as centre-half forward and centre-half back and full-back, can they... Surely they can't fit all five of them in the same team?
No, absolutely not. So... I would have thought, just from what I've seen, and I haven't seen enough of it to make a really good judge, to me, Laidler and Watson would be the ones more likely to go than Dygan. But, it's just going to depend on what they see as the job security and the likes. I mean, you would love to leave Watson in to give him more game time, but you have to win games now, so... They're probably going to look to get Bauer in to strengthen up and send Watson back now that he knows what AFL footy's like. Give him a run back at reserves level to work on a few things.
Now the reason I was racking my brains here is because there is another factor in there, of course, Brent Thornton, who of course played forward in that Gold Coast game, but moved back again in the Collingwood game. So I don't know, would he be the one to make room for Bauer?
Well, he has in the past, so that's a possibility. I'm not sure if one of those guys could play forward, maybe Laidler more in a forward role, or maybe give Watson a run up forward with his good kicking. That's definitely a really good point that maybe it's Thornton who will be one of the first out.
Because I suppose if we're looking for strengths, then obviously Thornton, his ability to switch forward and back is his advantage, but yep. Yeah, I mean, well, it's very hard to know what's going on in the mind of Brett Ratton. He's got to worry about his own job rather than worry about other players' jobs as well. So, yes, well, that'll be interesting to see at the selection table tomorrow. Now, moving on to the Gold Coast versus Bulldogs game, Molly. Callan Ward, I know we spoke about him after the first game, after he headed the Bulldogs, or was very close to heading the Bulldog scores, but his two subsequent scores have been lower each week, and he looks like he's regressing back to the mean. If we're talking mathematical talk, Molly, this regressing to the mean means that you have an outlier score, but then eventually your scores shift slowly back to your average, slips slowly back to your underlying average, and it looks to me like Ward's numbers are regressing back to what his true average. Is that fair, Mark?
There's some truth to that, yeah. I mean, that's the way it looks. Although, you know, he was playing the Gold Coast in Brisbane the last 2 weeks. His best score was against their hardest opponent, Essendon. So that's an interesting thing in itself, that maybe he's someone who, when things aren't as open with teams that are going to put pressure on their main players, that maybe he is a good option when those players aren't available. So
you're saying he's the sort of player who excels when there's a lot of tackles to be had because he's a hard tackling player, but he's not the sort of player who gets free for a lot of cheap plus six kicks and marks.
Well, that's part of it, absolutely. And then the other part of it is, you know, when things are open because you're playing a weaker side, perhaps they're going to Boyd and Higgins and all those sort of guys. But when those guys start to get a bit of attention, you know, he's not the guy getting the attention, so he gets a bit more of the ball because he's not as damaging as those other players. Mm. I haven't seen enough to say that's the case, but they're the sort of things that I think about when I look at that. And it's sort of interesting to see that, as you would say, the teams they're playing get worse. His scores have got worse.
Mm. All right.
Now, three games is probably not the right amount to try and work that out for. But
he does seem to be more of a Supercoach type player, I must say. Certainly, his numbers are bearing that out. On the Gold Coast side, because we could talk about a lot of the Bulldogs numbers, but of course they're inflated because they're playing the Gold Coast. Gold Coast itself was more interesting as a fantasy subject. So we got to see Michael Cove for the first time, Molly, and Danny
Wasn't
Stanley.
Impressed.
Yeah, and Danny Stanley. Not as impressed, I don't think, by Danny Stanley, but certainly seems to me like, I mean, you certainly look at Stanley's Supercoach numbers and the big discrepancies with his Dream Team numbers, suggesting he'll got a lot of late stuff and wasn't very effective with it. But Code looks startable to me. I mean, I know it's only one game, but so much better than Seb Tape, and just that they need about five more Michael Codes down there. They should have, I mean, this is the debate during the week. Why didn't Gold Coast take, you know, your Mzungus and Crackers and Richardsons and those players they've given up to other clubs for nothing, basically? But, I mean, in their wisdom, they've decided to go with youth, and they're going to get spanked every week, and they're going to get the media getting on their back every week now. So that's the price they're paying in the short term. And theoretically, once, you know, two or three or 4 years down the track, they're going to be winning flags and all this will be forgotten. But as far as fantasy coaches go, they don't really care about that. They care about next week. And next week, they need to play Michael Code, I think, to make sure they don't get flogged every week. But the question is Code's job security versus whether he'll get rotated through with the likes of Hutchins and the other, well, obviously Tape himself. So, yeah. I don't know, maybe Campbell Brown's injury increases his job security. I don't know, but I mean, do you think that actually does help him? Well, not injury, his suspension helps him in the short term.
I was going to say, his injury being a brain injury,
yes.
He's got white line fever,
a brain explosion. Yes. Does that mean he's locked in for at least the next 4 weeks?
Yeah, I think so. I think that would be what I would be taking out of it. That he, with Brown out, he's the bigger body that helps out. They've got. One easy game, a hard game, and then the what are they calling it? The Queensland Q or something, aren't they? The Queensland Clash or something. So they've got that coming up. You know, he's got a few games in order to get the points he needs to move his score. I think he's looking good. He looked really good. What I saw of him, I did trade him out, but I did so.
Why? Why did you do that, Molly? Tell me why you traded out Michael Code.
Well, firstly, I thought that Suckling was, you know, there's a lot going on for Suckling, and I thought he was going to be a good pickup.
So, else was on your bench that you could have sacrificed instead of Code?
All right, who have I got? It's a bit tricky because it's all over the place. I had Heppel. I had Dygan. I had Otten.
Yeah, Otten seems to me to be the most sacrificable of those, I reckon.
Well, yeah, and that's my thinking, that if he doesn't put a big score up this week and Code does, then, you know, if Code's picked for the week after, then what's stopping me trading Code back in? I mean,
terrible. No. Oh,
well, you know,
just wasted a trade.
I will have made, you know, whatever I've made on Suckling, assuming he still goes up, and whatever Otten makes in that time. So a couple of trades made me some money. You know, it would put me, you know, next week I'm going to be looking to upgrade someone from the group of teams that have the bye this week. That was my thinking.
Do you not acknowledge that is a bad process? you know, I mean, this is what Tarquin talks about. Bad process, I mean, good process, bad process, well, and then good result, bad result. The two are not necessarily correlative. You can have a good process and a bad result, and vice versa. So that strikes me as bad process. And you might even get a good result out of it, but it is bad process.
I can understand the thinking of that. My thought was code wasn't... the fact that code didn't play week one suggested that he wasn't guaranteed job security, A, and B, that I didn't know that he was going to come out and score an 80. So, you know, there was some suggestions that he would, that he'd be really good. He was a mature age player, so they have had good success in the past, but there's no guarantees. So, you know, that's what I took in it. You know, I thought Suckling looked good. There was a lot to like about him. He's been taking kickouts and playing on a lot. So, you know, if there's 10 points a game that he takes kickouts for and 80% of those he plays onto himself, that's like 24 points before, you know, any other play is played in the game. So, you know, I thought that he was, you know, at a 60 to 80 potential for the year. For defenders, that's going to put you towards the top 10. So I thought that was a good play myself to get Suckling in.
It was a good play. It was a good play to get Suckling in. It may end up being so, but you just chose the wrong dude to trade out, Molly. I mean, Otten was the same.
In hindsight, that's true. In exposed form at the time, you know, Otten had a, what did he have, one, a 66, I think. So, you know, I think a lot of people would have been questioning me trading out Otten if I had a 64, he had week one. So I think a lot of people would have been questioning me trading out a 64-point getter in his first game back after a serious injury.
That's true.
Coming into a bye.
Well, perhaps the original mistake you made was wanting to trade in the first place, because you had a bunch of guys who you didn't have an obvious trade out target is what I'm trying to say.
And
trading in Suckling might be good if you had it like a Toy or a Hibbard, but you didn't have a weakness. You weren't upgrading from a terrible weakness. You were upgrading from a person who was a perfectly good player in the first place.
Well, who hadn't played in the first two rounds of the year. One of those rounds was a game that you would have expected him to play. So, you know, I think there was question marks on him. And in my thinking, rightly or wrongly, as you say, maybe bad process, my thought was the fact that he had a bye in round one and then and then missed round two meant that he wasn't going to come onto the bubble or price change till round five, meaning one of my other guys that had maybe either like Dygan with job security problems or Otten with, you know, now showing that he's not scoring high enough to maybe maintain his average for as long as we hoped. I knew that one of them would come up and that I would need a downgrade target. And if Code did star or play very well, then I had automatically a downgrade target there, right there. Because I think that is something that, as the year goes on, downgrade targets are fewer and fewer around. Admittedly, you need less, but, you know, a lot of times last year, people were looking for downgrade targets and there was none available. So the fact that I would have Code as a downgrade target was an advantage.
The chat wants us to get back on track. One last question on this, Molly. Do you think that if you were a member of Fantasy Footy Club, that would not have browbeaten you with groupthink into not trading away Code?
Of course they wouldn't. They don't do that. We had Ben Laguna on, and everyone gets to make their own choices. So
obviously they have good process in not accepting spuds like us. That's for sure. Anyway,
that is probably the truth of the matter.
So let's move on to the. We're still talking about Suns players. Danny Stanley. Now, I presume a lot of people who have Stanley also have Code. Would you say Code is far more startable than Stanley at this stage? Because he is a half-forward flank, and that's part of the modern game, is that half-forward flanks do tend to get more scores in the 2011 version of the game. However, of course, Gold Coast aren't really playing AFL at this stage. They're playing Quaffle. They're playing BFL level. That's I mean, they're trying to manufacture a game plan out of a set of disparate parts, and it's not a they're not a real AFL team as yet. So a player like a half forward flanker like Danny Stanley can get lost a bit, and you know, you saw that with Matera and of course Dixon, and you know, a lot of those forwards are going to go missing for entire games. So I feel like Code is a much more solid play than Stanley at this stage.
Yeah, I think so. He looked really good. I didn't see all of that game, but what I saw of it, I liked what I saw of him. He was very impressive. He looked like an AFL player, like he was the right size and the likes. My gut feeling on the Gold Coast is that they're going to be extremely, their players from a fantasy sense are going to be extremely unpredictable for a number of reasons. The fact that, you know, different players against them are going to star and so put pressure on players at different positions. The fact that a lot of them are young, so with youth comes uneven performances. And the fact that they're going to be, you know, that because they're young, McKenna's already talking about having a rotation policy like the Australian cricket team had. So just all that makes up to a case of inconsistent performances, in my opinion.
All right. Also at the Suns, Daniel Harris. Now, I didn't have Daniel Harris in my dream team this year because I was taking the punt that the sort of wavy, ephemeral injury news we were sort of getting at the start of the season was going to turn out to be true. And, of course, I wasn't lucky on that one, and it turned out he did turn out for round two and is playing. Now, he's obviously got a fairly good score in round one, 62 and 58 in round two, and 62 and 58 in round three, which, of course, are his first two scores. So he's now on the bubble. If I'm looking to downgrade someone in my dream team, you know, for instance, a certain former captain of a premiership winning team, I'm looking at Harris.
Is that good process, bad result, or bad process?
Well, if he's injured, then it's good process. If he is injured, I think I can justify that trade if he's injured. Anyway, so look, I mean, if someone is in the position where they need to, or they want to, or you know, whatever the process is, they're looking at Stanley versus Curnow. Now, of course, Harris is on the bubble. He hasn't had his price rise yet. Is Harris's earning potential or his cash cow status, given that he hasn't had a price rise yet, is that worth going down to Harris and bypassing Curnow entirely?
Yeah, I think that's an equally good move if you don't have Harris, is to go to Harris. I think you're probably better off going to Harris than Curnow, because I think Harris's job security is a lot better. So perhaps his ceiling isn't as high, but I think his consistency is going to be a lot better as well. Even though he scored 97 round one and 62 round two, just making that sound silly. I think that's getting close to the ceiling and the floor for Harris.
I think they'll have the Gold Coast will have a better week this week in Melbourne, against Melbourne at the Gabba. I think Melbourne, from memory, I don't think Melbourne travel all that well at all. So I'd actually.
They have one up at the Gabba before, because remember how they used to sell a game up there, and I think they won one even when Brisbane not. And just on an off topic, I think your player profiles aren't working there.
Yeah, no, there's an issue there with the buy, and it's causing a few issues.
But your profiles are looking very nice with the break evens now on them for people who are looking for the break even. It looks fantastic again.
Play on.
Very useful.
Right, now, still on the Suns, the forwards. Now, Prestia was obviously the best performed of those forwards with 100 in their dream, 277 in Supercoach, which, of course suggests either disposal efficiency issues or junk time issues. I'm not sure which, because I didn't watch that game with my eyes. I was mostly listening to it. Matera and Dixon, very disappointing. A lot of people were relying on them, with obviously the likes of Richardson and Petrie having buys, and I certainly had to start Matera, and of course I was let down by his 45. So Matera and Dixon, are they startable anymore, Molly?
Matera still is, I think. I think he still has a lot of potential, and especially maybe up at the Gabba, where I think he might have some good performances up there. Excuse me, but Dixon. I was really worried about Dixon because I didn't have him. So, you know, I know a lot of people did have him. There was a lot of good talk about him. I hadn't seen enough of him or even seen his scores being that good that I was confident in him. So, you know, I hadn't picked him. And, you know, the amount of good dream teamers who were talking about having him made me nervous that I went with Prestia over him. Mm-hmm. So I feel a little bit lucky that that hasn't panned out. I mean, he looks like if he gets hold of a game, he could score quite well. And as you say, if the Suns could get their forward press working, maybe there's going to be some free ball for a guy like him. But yeah, I'm nervous about it. He has a dip, but just isn't getting enough ball up there with the Suns' trouble. But Matera, I think, is still, I'd rather not start him, but you know, he's still in the mix there. And as I said earlier, we're not going to have as much choices as we did in the past with these guys, because the buys, these multi-round buys, are coming up where there's trouble in that sense. So, I mean, I guess Matera is going to be someone who, if he doesn't put a good performance up, his break-even and his average are going to come closer and closer as these weeks go on.
I'm just trying to think of, with Dixon, about whether... because I believe he's about the same price as Prestia, now that I think about it. Could you see... I mean, look, it's a bit silly asking you about a sideways trade this week, given what you've done last week with Suckling, but could you see a sideways from Dixon to Prestia, given the obvious disparity in scoring potential? Although, now that I look at it, Prestia is actually another 30-odd more than him. But still, I mean, is that still worthwhile?
Oh, I think so. I think with Prestia's score of 100, I mean, it shows, and he was impressive in that 100. It's not like it, well, I don't know how you just get 100 playing for a bad side and not be impressive, but he is impressive. And I mean, the other great thing about it is that he is a midfield forward with his positioning, meaning if you've got Cracker, especially in your midfield, that adds that extra link between two rookie, you know, lower on your pecking order players, not just your top line players. And that can come in handy on, you know, who you think is going to score better within a week. You know, you could be, if you're having to play a forward and you think Presti is going to score more than Cracker, you can put him in your forwards. If you need a midfield, you can put him in your midfield. So that extra... you know, flexibility could be also a very handy thing to have, especially if you don't have too many forward midfielders in your forward line.
Mm. All right. We'll move on to the Adelaide Fremantle game, Molly. Now, Brody Smith was the player I wanted to speak about there. He's also on the bubble this week, of course, due to the Crows having the bye. And saluted with a fairly good score of 77, which was good enough for equal fourth amongst the Adelaide players in a pretty poor game by them. Apart from Thompson, none of them got above 90 in Dream Team. They certainly relied on him way too much. So two decent scores for Smith. I must admit I didn't watch him. I didn't watch out for him in the game because I had a lot of other things on my mind. But he's got the right rookie price. Just a teensy bit above absolute rookie price, but 50 in the first round against Hawthorn and 77 in that match. And if we look at Adelaide's forthcoming draw, they have Carlton. They have Port this week, of course, in the Derby. Carlton, Saints, Melbourne, Gold Coast, which is not a bad little. Of course, after that they get Collingwood, but not a bad little run for the Crows. They do have a. I mean, they were said to have a good draw in the first part of the year, and that's certainly not being backed up by the results on the weekend. But a player like Smith, he tends to get overlooked with, of course, the likes of Curnow and Libertore were all over those guys last week. I don't know, is is Smith going to get overlooked and be one of those ones who is going to out earn all of the rest of them, or is he going to be sort of mid range of the pack?
Yeah, he absolutely has that potential, and I mean the other thing that he has going in his favour at the moment is with all the injuries that the Crows are getting, his job security looks enhanced from that. So, you know, he's going to have a chance to play, you would think, and you know, 15 disposals, 7 tackles, and 3 marks. That's good figures. Now you probably wouldn't expect 7 tackles each week, but you know that's going to put him back at about 65 to 60, so that's still going to be enough to give him some nice price raises over the next few weeks. So the fact that he's got that buy out of the way and doesn't hit his next one for a long, long time, you're going to be looking to trade him out well and truly before he hits his next buy. So, you know, in that case, you're sort of protected there from that one.
Mullet in the chat reminds me it is a showdown, not a derby, or a derby, my apologies. Yes, now also at Adelaide, another player who's on the bubble, as of course most of them are this week, given that Adelaide's only played 2 games. Sean McKernan. Now, here, Molly, was my second use of the pumpkin icon, and this time it stayed on all game, because his starring performance in the Hawthorn game was not backed up with anything like that in this game. Frio successfully forward-pressed the life out of Adelaide, and McKernan didn't get much in the way of supply, and when he did get on the ball, he was battling with Sandilands and didn't get much in the way of ruck taps either. So is this the true form of McKernan, or was it just the fact that Frio just roll over Adelaide and the Sandilands factor? Where between his 47 this week and the somewhere near to 100, might have even been 100, it was 83 the previous week, where is his true form?
I think it's somewhere right in the middle. I think Fremantle is going to be a pretty hard game for a player of his sort, chasing around Sandilands at times. So I think that one's going to be a hard one for him. I mean, he's a rookie too, so coming back after a bye, although no one has done that for a while, he hadn't done it, so that was going to be hard for him. So I think the fact that they've got Port next and you know, maybe a harder games in Carlton and St Kilda and then Melbourne and Gold Coast, there's some stuff to like there. So being a back also helps his cause. You know, back rookies are traditionally hard to pick. I think I'd go Code over him at the moment, but you know, if you've already got Code and looking for a back rookie, he's someone to definitely consider.
It's going to be interesting to see how they deal with the loss of Marek this week in the showdown, because of course McKernan and to some extent Tippett had been covering for him in the ruck. So whether that actually, I don't know, they probably wouldn't go with McKernan as a first ruck or even Tippett. Tippett got very very little. He was cold on the weekend in terms of supply. Maybe they'll actually use Tippett as a first ruck and put McKernan in the square.
Well, that's a possibility. Also, I think I'm just going to try and pull up my injury report, but I think Jacobs.
Now the chat is telling me Merritt's going to play. I thought he accepted a ban for a week, or maybe it was a reprimand.
I think now that you mentioned that, I think it was. I think was always going to be under a game.
Research. Merritt's penalty stands, and it was 70 different points. Oh, my apologies then. I wasted.
You had me all excited, mate.
Yes. All right.
Think Sam Jacobs is back anyway, so that actually might put pressure on him as well. So, you know, right. maybe his job security isn't as good.
We'll move on to the Frio side here, Molly. Now, I've got 5 names down here to talk about for Frio, but we're going to talk about them all at once. Now, 2 of them are Paul Duffield and Greg Broughton. Is it Broughton or Broughton? I keep on forgetting. It's
Greg GB.
We talked about those guys last week, but I wanted to speak about them this week in conjunction with talking about the half-forward flankers, because what I've always said about Frio is that they've got way too many half-back flankers, but the way that the game is being played now with the forward press is that with a team like Frio, where previously they had got a lot of their scores out of the half back line, and it was players like Duffield and Greg, Beefall stop, who were engineering a lot of the scores, and you can probably throw Nick Subin in there as well, and obviously Roger Hayden, those sort of players. They were the ones who were getting the rebounds out of the back 50 and starting the scoring chains. These days, there's actually players like Nathan Fyfe, Stephen Hill, Chris Mayne, who are tackling in the midfield or around the half forward line, and generating turnovers and getting scores that way. So this is what part of the sea change in the league this year is that players like Duffield and Greggy Boy are less important. They're not being used as much. Their role is more to be to play as part of a 17 versus 18 press rather than playing man on man and running off their man and you know being a link player through transitions from defence to attack. So this is what I mean. I don't know whether you saw AFL Insider on Tuesday, Molly, but Brad Scott got out the wonderful modern 21st century technology of the whiteboard. And it wasn't even one of those whiteboards where you can do a printout of what it was, just a normal whiteboard. He basically talked about how the modern game is, it's not one-on-one anymore. It's not even 6-on-6. It's 17 versus 18, and you have one over the back hoping that the press gets broken down by players running over it. So the way that a lot of teams are playing, apart from obviously Melbourne that they were going on about and we'll talk about presently, teams like Freo are bypassing or not using the players like, you know, they're the halfback flankers in the way that they have been historically, and it's players like Fyfe and Hill who are now topping the Dream Team scoring lists because they're much more important to the game plan in terms of actually getting possessions and generating scoring shots. So if we're looking for a reason why Duffield and Greggy are scoring so poorly, I think that's the reason.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I think I can definitely see how that's going. So it's just a matter of if these guys are then, you know, playing further down the ground or finding some other role in that defence as well to do it. Like as we talked about earlier with Suckling, that he's taking the kick out, so that can add up, and there's a lot more playing on from kick out. So, of course, you know, we're three games in, so that's the other thing. It seems like that's going to be the way it is, but you know, will teams slightly tweak it and see if they can't change it around a bit? But there's definitely worrying signs for the likes of Broughton and Duffield. So it could trick some people, because I know myself, you know, when you see someone who has been, I think, top 10 backs like Duffield playing badly, then you hope it's just a temporary thing. And so, you know, it's bad news for all the people that have him, but good news for those that don't, because his price will drop.
Bad news for the owners of all three of those players, Duffield, Broughton and Broughton. Yes. Mm. All right, now, moving on to the Richmond to Hawthorn game, Molly. Of course, we are going to leave Hawke Talk to the end because Richmond is the home side. Now, Reece Conker. His score on the weekend was lower than his break-even going forward for Dream Team. Is now the time to get rid of him?
Well, I mean, there is that worry. I mean, I also worry that we're not going to have to worry about it because he's going to get dropped anyway. That's definitely a worry on my mind. Mm. So, you know, if he plays, there's the thought that he will hold the spot and be a chop out for your side. It's going to be tricky because some teams are probably going to come down to relying on him in their side. The thing that worries me a little bit is this is normally the spot where one of these players, and I'm not saying there's anything to suggest from evidence-based that this will happen, but where one of these players will then pop out and score 100 on you, and when everyone's trading him out and you're like, you know, why did I trade him sort of thing.
Mm.
So, but I think in reality, you know, it's definitely, if you're looking to get one of those midfield rookies in, he's definitely someone to consider the trade for.
Yes, Rod Brady brings up Andres Everett, who's another example. And, of course,
yep.
There was also another example in that very game, Molly. I was one of the many coaches who traded out Nathan Foley, only to watch him deliver a pretty good score, especially in Supercoach. Being as he is a Supercoach specialist, you would expect him to score better in Supercoach. 74 and 108. Were those of us who traded him out wrong-headed? Did we? I don't know whether it's a bad process or not, but it looks like it might be a bad result.
Well, I mean, it depends how you look at it who you brought in. I mean, if you've traded him out for Kerno, you've made 85K straight there 1 week. You've made a net of 85K. You know, and he's still got a break even of negative 50. So if he plays this week, you're probably going to make another 40K. Now, some of that might be offset by Foley beating his break even, but I think it's a case of good process myself. In my theory, I mean, others might differ, but in my theory, mid-prices you pick to score you points and to raise their price. And he, in the first 2 weeks, he didn't do either of them well. Well, he could have scored your money, but he was always likely to lose your money. So I think that it was definitely a valid option. Maybe not so much in Supercoach, coming off at 83, but in Dream Team it was definitely a fine move to move him on and get in someone better like Kerno or Liberatore.
Now, just to finish off our Tiger talk, Brett Deledio. Now, obviously people would have been disappointed by his 50-odd this week. Didn't do very well in that game, as a lot of Tigers didn't. People are starting already to talk about trading him out. Now, this seems to me to be a very bad process because one thing I've heard a lot of coaches say this week is that you look around at the backs and you wonder who the hell are going to be the top seven backs because they all seem to be having problems. We've just talked about the Fafrio guys, and even with Deledio's terrible score in that third game, I think he's still thereabouts, if not right up in the top seven. Perhaps we have to have lower expectations of our fantasy backs this year because of this forward press, because players are like a lot of previously, role gold premium backs are just not getting enough of the ball these days. And by the same token, we can expect players like Tapscott and Heppel to actually score almost like a premium back. The end result of that is, even if a player like Deledio, has 100 and then a 50, don't get despondent, because if he averages 75, that's actually pretty good. That's good enough this year.
Okay. Yeah. No. That's true. And I mean, that brings Code into being a potential keeper in the back line. You know, a potential top 15 guy. So, I think there's no way if I had Deledio that would I be trading him out. I mean, for me, it was good. I don't have him. He's one of those guys I was looking at as potential, to play a lot of time in the midfield and so avoid the things you were talking about with backs. There is also the chance that he will have to do tagging jobs, that Hardwick seems to be giving him, on guys like, Hodge and the week before Goddard. So that might affect his scoring, but I think he is the sort of player you would be looking to get into your side. So, his performance on the weekend didn't put me off him, and I don't think it should put anyone off him, really.
All right, now, Hawk Talk, Molly. We need to talk about Ben Stratton. Now, of course, he was revealed today that not only was going to do it, well, of course, the original injury on Saturday night was supposed to be a dislocated kneecap, which was, expected to be about a 6-weeker, and then it turned into a ruptured PCL, which was sort of a 6-to-12-weeker, and now after the surgery's happened, it's turned into a season-ending injury. Now, apparently, Alistair Clarkson has been quoted as saying Thomas Murphy was the obvious replacement there. Now, I know you're a big supporter of Thomas Murphy, Molly, and you know that I'm not. Now, something that was said by one of the commentators on the night, even before that injury, was that Hawthorn look a lot better with Luke Hodge at halfback, and that's where he played on that night. I suppose for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is because he was recovering from injury, and then of course copped a knock during the game to his kidneys from Jake King. So, I actually think, post the Stratton injury, that they should make that move permanent. Stick Luke Hodge at halfback. Let him be the Stratton replacement. Don't play Murphy. Although I do worry about, in that scenario, what happens to Cameron Bruce, because I did notice that in the press conference, I did hear afterwards Clarkson being interviewed and talking about Bruce and saying that yes, he's been off his game for the first couple of weeks. He's been less than what we expected out of him. I don't know exactly why that is. I don't think Clarkson actually gave a reason, whether it was fitness or desire or what have you. But I worry that post Stratton's injury that Cameron Bruce will continue to get lockdown roles and won't be released. But so you're obviously part of the hierarchy down there at Waverley, Molly. So you've got an inside line to the selection committee, as far as I'm aware. Is that actually going to happen? Are we going to see Luke Hodge at halfback? Are we going to see Cameron Bruce released? Are we going to see your mate Thomas Murphy, the Irishman, play that Stratton role? What's going to happen post that injury?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of different things that could happen. They could bring in Thomas Murphy to play that position. That's definitely a possibility. There is a thought amongst some Hawthorn fans, although his performances haven't shown it probably enough in VFL to warrant this, that a guy like Jordan Lyle could come in to play forward, and that Roughhead could be pushed back.
Ooh,
I don't see that happening either.
No.
I think actually the most likely thing to happen is that Mitchell and Rioli will come in, and it'll just be a case that Alice or Guerra won't be pushed out. That it'll be more a case that, as you say, someone like Hodge or Bruce or someone like that plays back more and fills the void. The only problem with that is teams that do have three taller targets, how that works out with the likes of that. So I think it's going to be an interesting selection to see who they go with.
Now, before we go on with this Hawk talk, they've been asking constantly about Poopolo in the chat. So they're talking about Poo's been killing it in the Magoo. So let's have Poo talk, Molly. What's going on with Paul Poopolo? Why is he not getting picked despite starring allegedly for Box Hill?
There's no spot for him. I mean, the defence has been good, and if Stratton hadn't went down, there still wouldn't be a spot open in the defence. So that's the only other option. I mean, if Mitchell doesn't come up and Osborne doesn't come up, that you bring him in for extra run out of defence. But unless there's an injury, I can't see him getting a spot anytime soon.
Mm. Now, give us the there's something going on in my bedroom. I'm gonna have to go. Just for a minute, Molly, give us the story about now who was the other kid down there in the back line? Kyle Chaney, and the Chaney versus Poopolo versus Murphy. So what does Murphy offer that those other two don't? I'll leave you for a second.
So to me, Murphy played third defender last year when Josh Gibson was out. He's probably better against the medium to small forwards, and I mean, some of this is that it's not really fantasy relevant. I think Poopolo is the only one that's most fantasy relevant, maybe Chaney. So Murphy will get the spot if they need to cover the tall defender, because he can do that, although he's better against the medium to smalls. Poopolo gives them run, and lots of it, and can probably play up the field a bit, maybe even as a lockdown small forward. And Chaney, just to me, he was going to be an extras player, during the preseason, he to me looked really good in the games I saw him play. He was very solid. He did his job on his man and used the ball well enough. So I think that's the three options if that's where they're going to go.
All right, I'm back. That beeping in my bedroom was not the fire alarm, because that wouldn't be the first time to be something on fire in my bedroom, but that's just let's go past that. Right now, so Bruce
Sentin Campbell,
yes.
Campbell, is it?
So yeah, now Cameron Bruce. Now you didn't speak specifically about him. Cameron Bruce, what is the problem with Cameron Bruce? Is it form? Is it fitness? What's the issue? Why hasn't he not fulfilled the KPIs that they've been setting for him down in Hawthorn?
Well, I mean, he had trouble on the weekend because he was the sub. That was the first thing. But, I mean, he just... I'm not sure whether he's not running to the right spots or whatever, but they weren't just the week before against Melbourne. He seemed to work very hard, but just didn't get the ball. He's had some disposal problems, which, you know, you look at the the Melbourne fans talk about him. That's one of the things they started bringing up once he left. Maybe before he left as well, but I just think he's not in the side to be a star. He's in there to do roles, so to be the utility that someone like Stuart Dew was in their premiership season. So I think he'll probably do the same thing. He's going to have good games every now and again, but he's more in there as a bits player.
So what you're telling me is he needs to put on about another 20 kilos and stick himself in the forward line. Yes, all right. All right. We'll get
injured during a grand final would be handy.
Yes, all right. Well, we'll move past Hawk Talk reluctantly for the time being, Molly, and move on to the West Coast and Sydney game. Now, I tried desperately to find a West Coast player to talk about that we hadn't already talked about and was actually interesting for fantasy purposes, and I couldn't find anyone. So the only question I can ask out of this game, Molly, is... Jack Darling, is he your number one rookie starter in the forward line? Given how easily he has, ensconced himself in that team, and how impressive he's been from not only a marking point of view but also a tackling point of view.
I wouldn't say he's my number one, but he's probably pretty close. I mean, he's had a good run of it. Prestia and Materia are fighting for that, and Darling as well. So, I mean, it's going to be horses for courses with those three. I mean, just as you brought him up this time, I've suddenly thought, you know, they're playing the Hawks. So, you know, maybe there's a position for there for him in the side because he's playing the Hawks this week and they can leak a few points. So, you know, I think there's that. But, yeah, no, his performance has been fine and he's going to be in the mix. You know, you may need a coin to decide which one of them you're going to put in.
All right. You know, I can see this is happening all over again. West Coast and North Melbourne, they're just the death of me in this podcast. I can have real trouble trying to find interesting things to say about them every week. But anyway, on to Sydney, Molly. Now, Andres Everett, we spoke about him before. Those who traded him out last week were then rewarded by a match-winning performance. He might have even got the X Factor, or if he didn't get it, he was close to it. I think Gary Rowan might have got the X Factor on the Fan Footy chat, but Everett could certainly have got it as well. Two goals in that last quarter, albeit one of them was after the siren. Moved forward, looked very good, and in a couple of contests, you know, was obviously very crucial match-winning performances in that last quarter. However, I get the feeling this is actually what I would call, especially given the haircut he used to have, which was pretty much a dead cat on the top of his head, this is pretty much a dead cat bounce, I think, with Everett. This is a case of good process, bad result, but next week he could turn out with a 35 and no one would be at all surprised.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think it was bad process getting him from the beginning myself, but... He, I can't see him continuing good results week in, week out. I mean, even if he is played forward, although, you know, maybe that is his spot. And as you say, you know, that pressure up forward and getting it from the press, that might be the case with him. But yeah, I don't think so myself. I wouldn't be backing myself into it.
On the chat, the chatter who calls himself Two Goods. Says I should have faith, but as a Swan supporter, mate, I'm sure you have faith, but the rest of us see what we see. So, look, I mean, if he proves me wrong, it wouldn't be the first time that a footballer has done things just to prove me wrong. So, we'll see. Now, also at the Swans, I think another. Well, we need to speak about Gary Rowan himself, Molly. Now, those who bought him as a mid-price improver have actually seen a price decrease in him this week. And it looks like, and of course, now they're talking about him in the press as being a substitute specialist. I never thought I'd see the day where you would actually see a substitute specialist. He's now the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of the Sydney Swans, Molly. Is this real? Can we actually see players who only play half a game every week? I mean, even as a young player.
Well, we're already seeing that. I mean, Gaff has been the sub every week for the West Coast. So, absolutely, we could see this. I think it sort of fits his role. He's very versatile. He could play a full game if needed, but you know, can come in a burst and do a job either back, forward, or in the midfield. So, you know, I think that makes him a good, if you're going to have a permanent sub, he sort of fits that mould of the X factor, but yet having versatility.
So, in other words, if you have him, then you just get rid of him because he's not going to be scoring any hundreds anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about his scoring, and you know, but you know, I would be looking that way myself. Yeah,
right.
I mean, if you know, in my model of mid prices making me money or scoring me points, I would have got rid of him last week.
All right, on to the Melbourne-Brisbane game, Molly. Now, we're talking about the change in the AFL, at least in the first three rounds, from a one where most teams do had been getting a lot of their scoring shots from either stoppages or rebounds, and nowadays it's stoppages and frontal pressure and tackles inside 50 causing across the midfield causing turnovers. However, of course, there's been a more than one of the panel shows during the week have identified that Melbourne is one of the very few clubs actually still playing the 2010 brand football. They're playing as if the forward press never happened. So they're still getting most of their scoring shots from rebound 50s, from scoring chain started from the back 50. So what this tells me from a fantasy perspective, Molly, is that players like Jack Grimes and Luke Tapscott are fantasy gold. They are actually genuine backmen who are being relied upon to carry the brunt of their side's forward scoring forays. And so, thus, a player like Tapscott could actually end up being a keeper because he's going to be asked to do that all year. Although, of course, all of this pressure during this week. Is basically on Dean Bailey to get him to conform to the new paradigm. So, I mean, is Bailey going to cave in and change, you know, midstream, like, of course, Clarkson did after the 1-5 start last year at Hawthorn? Is Bailey going to have to come to some realisation that he can't play the way he had played the last two or three years? He's actually going to have to follow the herd.
Yeah, I think it is. I think that is the case. That, you know, you can't sit back with bad performances like that. And this week could be where it comes to a head when they're playing the Gold Coast, you know. If it doesn't work out well there, something's going to have to change, and you'd think it's the process of the way they set up as being such an important thing that's the case. So I still think Jack Grimes can score okay. You know, he didn't have his best game against Brisbane, which is a little bit surprising, but I think he can definitely come good and continue his scoring. But yeah, Tapscott, he's turned out really well. He had a nice price rise, still very low break even. So, you know, if they don't change their system, then he's going to be someone who's going to score, you know, in the 60 range and maybe a little bit higher. So be a bench option for your side.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been on record as saying I don't really rate Bailey as a coach. I'm sure he probably doesn't rate me as a fantasy analyst, so we'll probably agree to disagree on that one. But it'll be interesting to see whether he actually does cave or not. There's certainly a lot of pressure on him from the media, so that does tend to weigh up after a while. On the Brisbane side, also in the half-back line, Molly, Jed Adcock and Piers Hanley have been very lucrative in the first part of the season, but, of course, now we're going to see Josh Drummond coming back into that side as early as this week, I believe. Where are we? The Brisbane looking at the index. I haven't actually got it listed there. So, of course, they're it'll be after the bye. So yes, now of course we're talking about teams who are about to have their bye. So, even though that report in the AFL does not include the Brisbane one, I hear around the traps that Drummond is going to be coming back for the round 5 clash, it will be. So will the advent of Drummond back into that side mean the a drop-off in scoring for Adcock and or Hanley? Because obviously Drummond is the one that they want to go through, and presumably Brisbane is a side which still is playing in some respects, the same old rebound game. I don't think, apart from anything else, it's because Brisbane just cannot keep the ball in their forward line. Their forward press is the worst in the competition, even worse than the Melbourne's. So, obviously due to the fact that they've got no tall forward. So, they have to go through Drummond, or they have to go through the halfbacks, which is why Adcock and Hanley have been going so well. But presumably once Drummond comes back, then he'll be taking up the majority of that responsibility.
Yeah, he'll be the one to move the ball out of the defence and the one they look to quarterback. But, I mean, Hanley, that might affect Hanley worse than Adcock, I would imagine myself. Because I've heard a couple of their games, and you might be able to confirm this. It sounds like he's playing more down the field, though, more in a midfield almost role.
No, he's starting from the back line, but obviously the game that, as it's played these days, there's a lot of concertina effect where the game does tend to get played between the 50s. But he is playing roles on players, but he's just beating them and getting off them. That's certainly the way I'll be seeing it.
Okay, so but yeah, I think he's got the potential to be, you know, top five back. So I wouldn't be too worried about Drummond's return affecting him too badly. In fact, you know, there's almost an argument to say it frees him up a bit and may help his scoring just receiving the ball from Drummond, who's such a good user of the ball. So, you know, I think that's something positive for Adcock rather than negative, and maybe the opposite for Hanley.
All right. On to the Geelong-Port Adelaide game. Now, there's not a huge amount of interest in this game because it was such a one-way procession. One player we did want to speak about from Geelong, Molly, was Cameron Ling. Now, we've been talking off and on about the Tigers and how they've been going in this new 2011 brand. And the aspect of the game that is affecting Tigers is the fact that when you are playing 17-on-18 as opposed to 1-on-1, then Tigers don't mean that much anymore. So you had Sewell, you know, racking up the stats a couple of weeks ago, and you had Daniel Jackson leading the stats for Richmond on the weekend, and Ling has been scoring DT tons, and now Kane Corns hasn't been doing so much, but you can throw a bunch of players. You can even throw in Matt Thomas from Port, who's also been. I mean, I think he. Scored a humongous 100 in the Collingwood game. He really is not a ball winner. He should be in the bottom half of the Port Dream Team scores because he should be playing roles every week. He shouldn't be the one getting the ball. And the same for Sewell, and Clinton Jones is another one who has been struggling to find his role recently. You know, he is a stopper. He is not a ball winner. And even though players like Sewell and perhaps even Jones think they are ball winners, they are actually suited to stopping, but stopping is not a valuable skill in the AFL just right at the moment. It's because of the zones and the press and the concertina effect of meaning that jobs aren't all that necessary anymore. So with players like Cameron Ling, Molly, what do they actually become? When they are, even with Ling and versus Corns in that game, Corns just seemed disinterested. I suppose the whole Port team seemed disinterested. But Corns got a lot of traditionally gets a lot of his ball across halfback, and of course that ball is a lot less prevalent these days. So players like Ling, who do win their own ball in the midfield, even though they are nominally a tagger, the players like that, like Ling and Sewell, who can win their own ball in midfield, are actually going to become valuable dream team commodities. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's part of the case. I mean, the other part of the case is the defensive tackling that they're going to do and you know, something that's a little bit left field. But if the weather remains bad, as it has, well, at least in Melbourne, there's going to be a chance for those guys to get a lot more tackles and the like. So,
is this the La Nina effect you're talking about?
Yes, yes. Mm. The thread on Big Footy that pointed that out, that we're going to have a wetter winter, wetter than average, so...
And then, of course, someone might
play into it a bit, but yeah, I think that definitely you would have to say that these, because they're not doing as hard a tag, there's more ball winning by these guys, and that's allowing for their scores not to drop off when they're tagging. So I don't know whether I'm looking to jump on them or anything like that, but it is an interesting point to keep in mind that these guys are still going to be doing jobs against. against the good players on the opposition.
Now, with Jared Irons, Molly, again, he's another one who scored in the 30s this week, and his break even is now in the teens. So you presume he's not going to score. His price will go up again this week, but not by enough to make him hugely valuable. So, I mean, is it time to get rid of him if you've got him as your ninth midfielder?
Yeah, especially if there's a Gold Coast midfielder that you've missed. So maybe Prestia, you know, if you've missed out on him, it might give you that dual positional positional player that you need. So definitely he would be one I would be considering trading out if there's a midfielder I want to bring in.
All right, the final game of the round, Molly, St Kilda and Essendon. Now, could we have seen the drop-off by St Kilda coming? And I suppose the other aspect of that is that, I mean, people have been talking about, oh, isn't it great that I didn't have Goddard because he's been poor recently, and the same for Montagna. But they're still scoring 90s, Molly. I think we're being a little bit harsh on these premiums from St Kilda, even though the team's not going all that well. Their premiums are still putting in pretty decent scores. I'm not that worried that I started with Goddard and Montagna and Riewoldt. They're still scoring like champions, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like there's too many others that outscore. I mean, Goddard is the ninth scoring back. So, I mean, it's even with his poor performance, if you call it that, you know, he's still averaging 86. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, swings and roundabouts. And you look at some of those guys ahead of him, Suckling and Graham and Hanley, you know, maybe guys you wouldn't expect to play the whole season. There maybe Graham can, but you know, it's hard to say. So, you know, I think Goddard is definitely still a good pick. Montagna still a good pick. Would like to see more from him. If you haven't got him, then you know it's gonna be a bonus for you that, you know, perhaps he'll, you know, he's got a buy this week. He'll turn it around after the buy and have dropped a little bit in price, so you can get him for a little bit of a bargain.
Mm. All right, and finally on the Essendon side of that game, Molly, Dyson Heppel. I really liked his game. He sat in front of the hole, in the hole in front of Riewoldt, and they just kept kicking it to him. It was a beautiful Dream Team and Supercoach game especially, and he's been outscoring himself in Supercoach over Dream Team every week, which is something you always like to see, especially from a backman. He looks eminently startable, and of course you can start him in the back line or the forward or the midfield.
I think he looks like
he could be startable and almost a keeper. Scoring at that level. I mean, his first buy is round 10. If he keeps on scoring at this level by round 9, I mean, you'd actually just want to go through all the way with him, wouldn't you?
Quite possibly. If you've got the other players around him, he could become your eighth back. So that would be a very helpful thing. So if you have him as the eighth back, then maybe later on in the season you can pick up Hibbard in the midfield as, you know, once you've done a lot of trades, if Hibbard doesn't come in too early, or another low-price back midfielder, if there is one, I haven't really looked. But that could be something later on that, you know, when you don't have a trade to put in your back line, in your midfielder, that if you've got Heppel in your back line and you don't have that link, you know, bring in someone to add that link later on could be quite helpful late in the season.
Mm. All right, well, I shall. That concludes the round review, and I shall resolve not to bring in any Hawthorn players this week, if I can help it. I might actually even trade some of them out, so look for Cameron Bruce, possibly, to average about 115 from here on in, because he's in my gun sights.
I'll look for him then.
Mm. All right.
Jeff's just messaged me. He thanks you most profusely and will probably mention you next week on the blog.
I'll look forward to that. Right. Just a programming note. I'm actually doing another podcast this week. I'll be posting. I'll put a link to it on the front page of Fan Footy, even though it's not a sport related one. I'll be doing a bit of a pilot of a new podcast, so look out for that one.
Mm,
and also, yes, I should ask you, Molly, just since we've got a little bit of time, and this is a reasonably short show. I've taken the blog off the front page of Fan Footy this week because I've sort of bitten the bullet and realised that with all the other things I've got on my plate, I can't really be asked, doing the, sorry, that's a PG, not really a PG-13 rated word, but...
You couldn't be asked about it.
No, I couldn't be asked about it. The blog, I haven't got the energy for it, and I think it's probably better if I concentrate on the application aspects of the site rather than the content aspects, at least during the week. I just haven't got the strength for it. So is that a bit of a give up on my part, or am I concentrating on my strengths?
I think it's a good idea in concentrating on your strength. As you said, I think your one of your strengths is the blogging, but you know, if you don't have time to do it with all the other stuff that you're wanting to work on, then I think having it there was not the best look when you've got other content that is a bit more dynamic. And I think I said to you via Twitter or on Skype or something that maybe you might even want to think about putting the fan footy forum information a little bit higher, but that's just an idea.
No, I have moved it higher, so it's above the fold nowadays. So
yep. So yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, now that you've cultivated that quite nicely, then that's a good area for people to be using. So you know, I think having some sort of, also I said to you, like, having some sort of maybe having a rotating player profile with relevant, you know, players. Now, that's easy for me to say and might be hard for you to implement, but yeah, that could be something pictures. Interesting as well.
Yeah, getting pictures is always a problem for that.
Well, that's tricky, isn't it? So, you know, that would be something that you'd like to have in that sort of feature. So, you know, I think the fan, as I said earlier, and I wasn't just blowing smoke up your ass. Oh, sorry, not up your ass. you've got me going now. The player profile pages are very helpful looking through and trying to find out the information you want quickly. So the break even and then seeing, I like what you've done with the buy now, having that in there. Mm. I personally would love to see the buy actually shown up as a round.
Yeah. Anyway, we're getting very esoteric, but look, yeah. I don't say this very often, but I'd just like to thank everyone who comes to the chat, not only for the coaches box, but also for fan footy. I've been breaking through traffic records again this year, and even though the growth in the general industry has been a bit flat the last couple of years, so I'd just like to thank everyone for patronising fan footy and me, and obviously go to AFL Space for your content needs during the week nowadays, I suppose. It's of course, Dream Team Talk or Fantasy Footy Club or any of the other places that you can get this huge explosion of fantasy content during the week. I'm quite happy to publicise them and concentrate on other things, just to concentrate on the weekend things. So, just
and
like
you had a famous, is it a famous endorsement over the weekend too?
Yes, Joe Ingles, the basketballer, said very nice things on Twitter, so thank him for that as well. Yes, we're going for yes. Thanking everyone. Everyone's loving everyone at the moment. Yes,
so tell your friends and neighbours and everyone else to make sure they're watching it and tune in over the weekend, because it really is good. I mean, I've absolutely loved having it on my phone, checking it out over the weekend, and probably people around me not getting anything out of me on the weekend, so...
On that note, anyway, there is a lot of love in the room, so we'll end it on that lovely note. So,
I forgive you for picking Mitchell.
Excellent. All right. We shall see you guys next week on the Coach's Box.
Okay. Good luck, everyone. Don't forget, don't do a Dr. Dream Team. Trade out or move out your players.
Yes. Ricky Pettit rule and also Cameron Richardson rule. Or Dr. Dream Team rule. Yes. All right. See ya.
Okay, guys. Bye.